All right, so ready for your next table?
This is Elaine Saul, and I'm going to finish off with the tables 2, 3, and 4. And I'm going to start with the irrigation and nutrient management for surface water option table. And just to kind of frame this, as a reminder, we had pushed out framing questions for the September board meeting. And these questions were related to what can growers and the regional board do to demonstrate quantifiable progress to minimize nutrient discharge to surface waters to achieve water quality objectives? And similarly, what can we do to ensure current and future affordable, safe, and clean water for drinking environmental uses? So as we move forward through this option table, we've taken these questions into consideration, and we feel that what we have in the option table, what we're considering, addresses these questions. So very similarly to the options table that Arwin has already outlined for us as the example table, as well as the option table she's just gone through related to the irrigation and nutrient management for groundwater, I'm going to do now the same for the surface water side. A lot of this information is going to start to look very repetitive, especially as we go through the next three tables. Phasing or prioritization, as we look to what we currently are doing under Ag Order 3.0, we are utilizing tiers which are based on ranch characteristics that include ranch size, crops grown, chemical usage, proximity to impaired surface waters, as well as proximity to impaired public supply wells. As we move over to Ag Order 4.0 Option 1, we are considering using phases, as Arwin has mentioned previously. And for phases for this surface water protection for irrigation and nutrient management, we would be looking at location-specific conditions such as water quality impairments in surface waters, high-quality surface water areas, and risk to surface water areas. And those would be used to help identify the phases and the prioritization areas. As we move over to Ag Order 4.0 Option 2, this again is the idea of a spectrum of options, and here is no prioritization or phasing. All requirements would be at the ranch concurrently at the same time. As we move down to numeric limits, Ag Order 3.0 currently does not identify any numeric limits related to nutrients in surface water. As we move over to Ag Order 4.0 Option 1, we are considering a discharge limit for nitrate concentrations, ammonia concentration, as well as orthophosphate concentration. And again, those are TBD, to be determined, because we are looking for stakeholder input through this public comment process. Staff is still working on how we can incorporate some of the TMDLs that we have related to nutrients as part of these numbers. And of course, we're also looking for board input and discussion as we move forward as well. The differences between option one and option two is, again, option one, we would perhaps see relatively higher limits for those discharge limits. Option two would be relatively lower limits that could be adopted. Again,
question on that. Have you received any input from stakeholders on what they think appropriate discharge limits might be?
At this time, no, we have not. We have heard, and I think you'll see in the ag alternative that was included as a supplemental, that they felt that discharge limits were not appropriate, specifically at the edge of field.
Okay.
So another consideration is the application limit. Again, very similarly to what Arwin has described previously, we would propose that ranches that repeatedly exceed the nitrate, ammonia, and or orthophosphate concentrations per the time schedule be limited or prohibited from applying nitrogen and or phosphorus from fertilizers, composts, or other amendments. The repeatedly exceed, again, it could be a higher number of exceedances that would be allowed before this type of application limit is triggered as a consequence. Under option two, the application limit is instead now prohibited. We would prohibit application after a certain number of exceedances. Again, we could consider relatively lower number of exceedances before that prohibition is triggered. Time schedule, Ag Order 3.0, currently there.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
In terms of the discharge limits, I'm trying to understand how that, kind of what sort of process we would go through to set that. I mean, would the discharge limit, kind of the default discharge limit, be I guess if it's concentration based or loading based makes a big difference, or are we look, do we have a sense of that or of where staff is looking on that? And I guess my other question is, I'm just trying to get my head around this. Is a discharge limit, if it's concentration based, would the, if there's if we're trying to meet a beneficial use of municipal drinking water, would the nitrate, nitrogen discharge limit be the same as the drinking water limit, or would it be based on the quality of the water it's going into? Help me understand this.
Those are all great questions. So I would say, first of all, when it comes to the discharge limits and the specific numbers, we really are looking for input, again, from stakeholders on what those specific numbers should be. For what staff are considering in our proposal here is concentration-based. So we would be looking to some of our existing water quality objectives that we do have, either for the protection of municipal drinking water or for the protection of aquatic habitat, so another beneficial use. So we do have some numbers available to us already. We also have the TMDL process, which is a long process that takes into account a lot of different information, and they set specific numeric thresholds, targets that we can use to incorporate in the specific nutrient option table. So a lot of those TMDLs are already adopted, and they are, the agricultural order is essentially the mechanism for which to implement those TMDLs.
So if it, I was going to say it didn't answer my question, but since I asked like five questions, that's hardly a fair standard. If there's an aquatic life standard, which is about a, for nitrogen, it's like a tenth of the drinking water standard, right?
Correct.
Does that mean that the discharge couldn't exceed that if we did I'm having a little brain freeze here. What's the opposite of loading? A concentration standard?
So yes, we can definitely consider that. It could be that the discharge, we would put it at 1 milligram per liter, or we could also choose 10. So again, we have some options when it comes to setting the specific numeric limit.
But essentially the standard would be then, if it were concentration based, would the standard then be that we were trying to meet that the water for purposes of nitrates, in our example, would have to either meet the drinking water standard or the aquatic life standard as it came off the field?
I'm sorry, can you restate that question?
Yeah.
I didn't understand.
So if it's a concentration-based standard, and let's say we chose the drinking water standard of 10 parts per million, would that mean that the discharge itself had to meet that standard?
No, not necessarily. And a lot of it has to do with the assimilative capacity of the water body. So
right.
even though we have a drinking water standard of 10 milligrams per liter, when we look at the individual ranch's contribution to a receiving water body, we may want to set the individual discharge limit lower, such as at 1 milligram per liter, so that we can actually achieve the drinking water standard or the numeric objective or the water quality standard in the receiving water.
So we might set it, even if we were seeking to achieve a drinking water standard in a given water body, we might set the standard for the discharge at lower than that. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Might we set it at higher than that? Excuse my ignorance here.
Higher than the drinking water standard?
Higher than the standard we were trying to attain for the receiving water? If we're doing concentration-based, I would assume the answer is no.
Yeah,
that
would
correct?
Be my answer is no.
If we're doing loading-based, is the answer potentially yes, potentially no?
So when it comes to loading, we don't have as good a grasp on how we can determine what a concentration coming off the field should be to achieve a certain loading in a receiving water body. So when it comes to loading, we are really looking for input from the stakeholders on how we could go about using loading to determine load reductions to achieve the receiving water numeric objective, numeric limit.
And then it sounds like whether we're doing a loading or a concentration-based standard, that it might vary sharp, or it might vary considerably, depending on location. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Elaine. Just a follow-up to that, because we understand that part of what you're talking about is the way in which TMDLs are structured. So can you clarify for me, for example, where the concentration-based numeric limit would be less in the drinking water standard? That's consistent with the way TMDLs are implemented currently. So what you're talking about is not changing any of these existing programmatic implementation structure guidance for implementing and achieving compliance. Would there be any of this that would not defer to the way we apply TMDLs now? Would there be additional measures that could be considered? And is that where stakeholder input may inform us about other ways, other approaches to achieve these reductions in discharge?
Yeah, I would say that we are looking for stakeholder input on other ways to achieve these reductions. When it comes to these specific concentrations, we are looking to the TMDLs currently to help inform us on what these concentrations could be. And the TMDL concentrations are held at the receiving water level. So those concentrations are accountable for at the receiving water and should be achieved in the receiving water. But again, kind of going back to what we were just discussing, we may want to set the discharge limit lower so that those load reductions, those concentrations can be achieved in the receiving water.
So where there are existing TMDLs and particular locations where ranches are adjacent to the impaired water body that has an approved TMDL in place, do we have data on those farms currently on what they are doing to comply with the TMDL? Is there something specific in the data that they submit in their reporting, or is it more general, say, third-party reporting data, Preservation Inc. in particular, and our CCAMP data? How is that happening currently?
I would say that the agriculture order up to this point, we have not actively included the TMDLs in consideration when we've adopted our agricultural orders. So moving forward, what we would like to do is to ensure that the TMDLs are implemented through the ag order, which is the appropriate mechanism. And we do already collect information that can help growers identify what they are doing in those TMDL areas to demonstrate progress. And this would include our annual compliance form, where we do collect management practice information. So we do have a level of information that growers are already reporting that can help document progress that they're making for these TMDL areas. But we have not been actively doing that for the past ag orders.
So I have a question on the monitoring of surface water discharge from ag land. If you take the aquatic habitat limit, for example, 1 milligram versus drinking water 10, which by reducing 10 times the amount, you become becoming a little more vulnerable to the great swings and variation of surface water discharge from land? Because if you take water quality measurements in a stream, you do have somewhat of a constant in terms of the measurement. If you take measurements on a farm, depending if you're looking at tile drain or you're looking at a stormwater event and the discharge, how do you plan to handle the variability of these events, which may have very significant up and downs in the level of concentration?
Yeah, we do recognize that there is variability. One thing I think you'll see is we start going through some of the monitoring and reporting section, where we do have individual discharge monitoring listed there, and we trigger that as a consequence for those growers that fail to repeatedly, they're in an area that repeatedly exceeds the discharge limit or the water quality objective in the receiving water. So again, we would use that individual monitoring data as a consequence. So recognizing that it's variable, it would really be a tool for growers to understand what discharge is coming off of their property and perhaps what management practices they need to implement to ensure that their discharge is reduced.
Thank you.
My question involves the on-point source policy and some of the arguments I see in the correspondence that we've received. What I would like to hear you talk about is the approach of basically turning ranches into point sources, whereby we have requirements, individual requirements on discharge limits. And I see got letters here that say people disagree with that approach. And I'm just wondering, does the non-point source policy tell us that is okay to do on farming land? And where is staff getting the authority to go down that road? Turn on the mic, Chris.
Yeah, it's on.
There you go.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, to my knowledge, and Ms. Yu can help us out here, but to my knowledge, the non-point source policy does not preclude us from using edge of field monitoring in order to determine whether or not we're making progress towards achieving the program goals, such as achieving water quality objectives. So to my knowledge, and again, Ms. Yu can help us out here, it doesn't preclude us from doing that. We've been doing that in the current ag order, ag order 3.0, ag order 2.0. Exactly that.
And what did the Court of Appeals decision say with respect to the non-point source policy, that it needed to be followed?
That it needed to be followed, I'm not sure.
The non-point source policy requirements needed to be applied to the irrigated lands permitting program.
I would say that is a fair characterization, yes.
I don't think the Court of Appeal decision, you're referring to Coastkeeper 1. The Court of Appeals decision in that particular case was really limited to one particular provision that the state board order had modified. So I don't think I can address your particular question. I don't think it was really raised.
So, Stephanie, what about the argument that this is non-point source pollution, and we shouldn't be trying to regulate it like it was a point source? I think that's what it boils down to, that argument.
I would have to look into that and get back to you on that.
Okay. Well, it's here. The argument is there. I'd like to know what staff's response is to it, whenever you're able to do it.
Yeah, thank you. And just to clarify on this table, what we're looking at is a discharge limit. And that discharge limit, what we mean by that is an edge of field limit, is precisely what you were asking about, Mr. Young. This isn't a receiving water limit. This is a discharge limit at the edge of the field. And what we're asking for in that TBD, that to be determined, what does everybody think? Mr. Johnson was asking, what should that limit be? Should it be a loading limit? Should it be a concentration limit? If it's a concentration limit, should it be equal to the water quality objective? What should that limit be? And we haven't gotten that far yet in our recommendation. That's what we're looking for input on. But to be clear, we're looking on that discharge limit at the edge of the field that we believe is consistent and can be used with a non-point source policy in order to ascertain whether or not progress is being made to achieve water quality objectives in that water body where the discharge discharges to.
Okay. And, Chris, that additional explanation helps. That's kind of what I was looking for.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand. Could you say that again, please?
The explanation helps. Okay. That you just gave in explaining why, what the source is of authority for requiring a discharge limit at the edge of the field to comply with receiving water standards. So I'd like to see that at some point, not today, but later as we develop this, kind of more fully explored, because I see it as a challenge coming up in the comments that we're receiving.
Indeed. So there is the water quality objective that has to ultimately be achieved, unless to take the easy one, the drinking water standard in a receiving water body. That has to be achieved at some time in the future. The non-point source policy gives us some discretion about when we think that water quality objective in that water body can be reasonably achieved. In other words, if the board adopts an order on March 7th, 2020, we have a discretion that water quality objective does not need to be achieved on March 8th. We have some period of time. So then the question becomes is how do we document that progress for the public and everybody that progress is being made to ultimately achieve that water quality objective? And the non-point source policy has that language called quantifiable milestones. What exactly is a quantifiable milestone? Perhaps there are examples of quantifiable milestones that we can talk about. One of them is a discharge limit at the edge of the field.
Okay. And it looks like the East San Joaquin order did not have any precedential requirements for this?
No, they did not.
Okay. Thank you.
So I hope I'm not jumping ahead, but relative to the section in option one, option two, application limit, at the bottom, the bottom line reads, relatively higher limits for option one, relatively lower limits for option two. So I get that with option two, everyone is going to be using the same or applying the same criteria and management practices. And so a lower limit would get us there faster. But I'm I'm confused by the relatively higher limits for option one, considering we already have a time schedule related to the TMDL. So why would they be different?
Here again, it's just us trying to display that we have a spectrum of options, and I understand what you're saying. You know, on the surface water related component tables, we are a little bit more tied to what the TMDLs are already telling us that we need to do. So the relatively higher limits perhaps is something that we could apply more towards the application limit, meaning how quick do we go about applying that application limit versus the option two. Maybe we would trigger the application limit quicker in option two than we would in option one.
So the time schedule would take into account the TMDL and where we are with it?
Correct.
And, yeah.
Yes.
So it's a little bit confusing that we're going to have dual time schedules here, but I think I'm hoping that it'll be very clear how those TMDLs are integrated into these calculations.
And that's our goal as we move forward. We're currently in discussions with our TMDL unit. They're providing us with recommendations on how best we can incorporate the TMDLs, recognizing that there are multiple numbers as well as multiple timelines. Mm-hmm. So how do we best go about putting those?
Exactly, especially for those older TMDLs.
Correct.
That are further along. I don't know that we've seen the improvements that we needed to see within the time since the TMDL has been put into place. So I think there's a number of complicated factors there, and hopefully there's some transparency we'll be able to achieve. But that's just an observation, not really a question, I think.
So I'm confused on the point source, non-point source question. And once again, I appreciate everyone's tolerating me, educating myself on the job here. But it appears that we are moving in this set of proposals from regulating the surface water discharge. Doesn't appear we've been regulating it as point source discharge, and it appears that in this set of options we're proposing doing that. Is that correct? I mean, I understand there's questions about whether that's appropriate. I also understand it comes out of a pipe into a receiving water, kind of looks like a point source.
This is Arwen. I think that that's actually an overstatement of what we're trying to convey with these options tables. We're not proposing to convert all non-point sources to point source discharges. And in fact, I don't think that you need to go quite that far to perform individual discharge monitoring. I would not say that the ranches that currently are required to perform individual discharge monitoring under Ag Order 2.0 and 3.0 have been turned into point source discharges. So I do think that that's overstating what we're trying to accomplish here.
But if it's coming out of a pipe into a receiving water, isn't that a point source discharge by definition? It seems like it would be.
I think that's where it depends on what the pipe is collecting from to some extent, and now
that
you're getting
sense.
Into details on the definition of point source versus non-point source, which can get complicated fairly quickly. But those would be good points to monitor if there are pipes that are coming out. Those are good monitoring points. But again, if that pipe is a tile drain, it's collecting from a large network, it's in a way, while you have a point that you can monitor, it's still not turning that discharge into, in my opinion, not turning it into a point source discharge.
Because it's a point that could have numerous sources feeding it?
Yes.
So, okay, so if I understand correctly, you're saying we are that what these options envision is continuing to regulate it as a non-point source discharge, or is it that simple?
I think that it is continuing to regulate it as a non-point source discharge, the requirement would not be to turn the ranch into a point source discharge so that we can monitor those point sources. That would not be the requirement. This still is a non-point source program. It's still a non-point source type of discharge.
Do we get to choose? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what the limits of our, through the whole day today, I'm trying to figure out what the limits of our discretion are. I mean, if you have a discharge from a single farm, that's clearly a single, you know, whether it's a tile drain or a over the top of the soil discharge, do we have the option of regulating it as non-point source discharge?
Perhaps, Ms. This is Christopher Rose. Perhaps, Ms., you can help us out here. My understanding is that I think it's the Clean Water Act actually specify agricultural discharges as non-point discharges, period. Is that accurate, Ms. Hume?
That's correct. So technically, a point source discharge goes into a water of the United States. So everything else, even if it does come out of a pipe into a water of the state, including groundwater, would be considered non-point source.
And because even though it's a water that would, in other circumstances, if somebody else was putting something into it, be considered a water of the United States because it's agriculture and they're exempted from the Clean Water Act, it's, in this instance, not considered a water of the United States? Is that how it works?
Could you phrase that again?
Okay. You said in this instance, it's being discharged to a water of the state rather than a water of the United States. So I would assume then that what that means is if there's two pipes right next to each other, one coming from a particular ranch and one coming from the Salinas stormwater system, into the same water body, that the Salinas stormwater system is flowing into a water of the United States, and the ranch is flowing into a water of the state because ag is exempted from the Clean Water Act? Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm saying that if those two pipes are going into a water of the United States, if it's a pipe, if those two pipes are going into waters of the United States, that would probably be a point source. Because ag, the discharge tends to be flowing over land. You know, if it's flowing over land into that water body, that is actually also a non-point source, but it's regulated as a non-point source.
But what if it's flowing from a tile drain from a distinct ranch, let's say, into one of those several water bodies in the Salinas Valley that we tend to call water bodies and agriculture tends to call ditches. Some of those are on the 303D list. Would that be a point source or a non-point source?
Is the tile drain a 303? Are you asking whether the tile drain itself?
No, I'm
is
asking
water body
whether the discharge into the water body, drain. The Salinas Reclamation Ditch, for example, is a 303D listed water body, isn't it?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I'm sure staff does.
This is Arwen. This, in the scenario that you're presenting where you have a single ranch and you can really clearly say this is the ranch that is discharging, is that the scenario you're presenting? It would still be an agricultural return flow, which means that it's a non-point source discharge. And
okay.
So that's what says non-point source regulation versus point source regulation. Furthermore, if it were to be a point source regulation, that now triggers totally different requirements. We're talking NPDES.
So
that's a different
fact that
world.
It's an agricultural return flow comes from what authority?
The Federal Clean Water Act.
Okay, so if it's an agricultural return source, if it's an agricultural return source, then it's by definition non-point source, even if it comes out of a pipe from a particular ranch. Got it. Okay. So we're regulating this under non-point source.
Yes.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
So as we move on to the time schedule to achieve numeric limits, you'll see in Ag Order 3.0, we currently do not have a time schedule. And as we move forward, we would like to propose that we, of course, do have a time schedule to comply with the non-point source policy. As we see in Ag Order 4.0 Option 1, we want to go through a process such as establishing interim quantifiable interim limits. So that is demonstrated here with the TBD milligrams by a certain date. So again, those would be the interim milestones to then achieve the actual discharge limit by a date that we would specify. The difference between Ag Order 4.0 Option 1 and Option 2, again, as stated on the slide, under Option 1, we could consider a relatively longer time schedule. Under Option 2, a relatively shorter time schedule. Again, we would also need to take into consideration the TMDL time schedules that are already outlined for us. As we move on to monitoring and reporting, another required element of the non-point source policy, I'll highlight very quickly currently what we do require under Ag Order 3.0. Right now, in the annual compliance form, which is required for all Tier 2 and Tier 3 ranches, they must submit information on the following: irrigation, stormwater, and tile drain discharges to surface water, as well as irrigation and nutrient management practices. As we move forward to Ag Order 4.0, Option 1 and Option 2, we want to rename essentially the annual compliance form and collect very similar information. We would rename the annual compliance form to the Irrigation Nutrient Management Plan. This is a precedential requirement as part of the ESJ petition order. And under Ag Order 4.0 Option 1, all ranches must monitor the following. And they would report this information based on the phase that they're in. Again, we would include the irrigation, stormwater, tile drain discharge characteristics, as well as the irrigation and nutrient management practices. Again, the stars highlighting which components are precedential from the ESJ petition order. Ag Order 4.0 Option 1 and Option 2, the differences being, as highlighted below, relatively more estimates would be accepted in Option 1, where relatively more measurements would be required under Option 2 when they're reporting in their irrigation and nutrient management plan.
I have a question, and it's kind of general to that distinction between Option 1 and Option 2, where we start off, because of the phased approach, with a more estimate, using more of an estimate system. But I'm assuming that in that transition, maybe not in this order, maybe in a future order, we do eventually get to more of a measurement standard. Is that what the staff is envisioning? How we get from estimates to measurements?
That is a way, absolutely, that we could consider it for future orders. We could start off with requiring growers to measure their discharges and then move on towards having them actually, estimate their discharges and then actually require them to measure it in future orders. We also should consider, you know, how fast we want to improve water quality. So if they need to meet discharge limits by a certain date, this information is very helpful for growers to know and understand. So measurements could be appropriate, but maybe some actual estimates are also okay.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that estimates get us up and running in terms of starting to figure out how efficiency perhaps and effort in moving toward a more structured measurement protocol, and that we could potentially, we could see this even in the phased order, we could see it moving from estimate to measurement in areas where, say, the technology is there or practices have already been investigated, explored, and applied. I'm sure there's a range. So Is that also possible?
Yes, okay. I would say that is possible.
Okay, good. Thank you.
So currently under 3.0, we do have our surface water quality trend monitoring. And this is monitoring that's currently conducted by Central Coast Water Quality Preservation, Inc. So we would propose continuing this monitoring as we move forward with option one and option two. Perhaps there would be some slight changes. We would want to make sure that we're monitoring for the correct constituents on the correct frequency. But again, we would propose that the surface water quality trend monitoring continue. Follow-up receiving water monitoring currently is not required under Ag Order 3.0. I will provide a little history, though, that it was required under Agriculture Order 1.0. Central Coast Preservation, Inc. did complete some follow-up monitoring. So there is, I would say, a precedent for follow-up receiving water monitoring to occur. And we would like to essentially bring this concept back under Agriculture Order 4.0, whether it's option one or option two. Under option one, we would want the ranches in a subset of watersheds that repeatedly exceed water quality objectives to complete this follow-up receiving water monitoring. And they could do it either individually or they could do it through a cooperative monitoring program if one so chose to take up this level of monitoring. The idea with this follow-up receiving water monitoring is really for source identification. So we have the surface water quality trend monitoring, which is giving us the health of our surface receiving water bodies. The follow-up receiving water monitoring then is more identifying where the pollutant sources are coming from and is highlighting those sections in the receiving water monitoring. So it's a higher resolution of monitoring. As we move over to 4.0 option two, the difference being is that all ranches in a watershed, instead of a subset, would be required to complete this monitoring if there's repeated exceedances in the area. And again, growers could either do this individually or through a cooperative monitoring type program.
Excuse me. The plain text seems to say something different than you just said. Option one is ranches in a subset of watershed areas. And option two, what you just said is all ranches in watershed areas that exceed, whereas what the text is ranches in all watershed areas. I would assume in option one, it's all ranches in a subset of watershed areas that exceed. And option two is ranches in all watershed areas that exceed. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't.
Okay. Can I just ask that you restate option two then?
Yeah, so option two is essentially ranches in all watersheds, just as it's stated, in areas that repeatedly exceed the water quality objectives, versus option one are ranches in a subset of watersheds, differencing being the number of watersheds that would be required to complete this follow-up monitoring. Again, I'll just highlight again for the differences between option one and option two here, relatively more estimates allowed under option one, relatively more measurements required under option two. Again, as we work to identify specific pollutant sources, we would recommend that we continue the individual discharge to surface water monitoring. We are currently doing this under Ag Order 3.0 for a subset of Tier 3 ranches, and they provide information on their discharge flow rate and volume, as well as their discharge nutrient concentrations. We would propose to continue this level of monitoring under Ag Order 4.0 Option 1, as well as Option 2. Again, the idea here is that if growers are repeatedly exceeding water quality objectives, that they would need to do additional monitoring at the ranch level. Option one, ranches in a subset of watershed areas that repeatedly exceed may be assigned this discharge monitoring. Again, they would have to do discharge flow rate and volume as well as discharge nutrient concentrations. allowing for more estimates under option one. Option two, all ranches in a watershed, or excuse me, ranches in all watershed areas that repeatedly exceed the water quality objectives would perform this individual discharge monitoring, and again, would include information on discharge flow rate and volume and discharge nutrient concentrations.
So it seems like there's two differences between one and two here. One is that option one is we essentially prioritize watershed areas that are repeatedly exceeding, and option two is we apply it to all watershed areas. And the other difference is may be assigned and must be assigned or must perform. So it looks like in option one, there's some discretion on the part of the region in a targeted sub-watershed or a targeted watershed area to say this, and this ranch are going to perform a higher level of monitoring. And option two would say in all watershed areas that are repeatedly exceeding, all the ranches are going to perform this monitoring. Is that right?
That's correct. And really the idea with the option one being that for those ranches that are not demonstrating progress, we would want to perhaps assign this individual discharge monitoring to really gauge what type of pollutant loading, pollutant sources they are contributing to the receiving water bodies.
Okay. I got it. Option. All right.
So for incentives, as Arwen has already discussed, under Ag Order 3.0, we do have a sustainability certification incentive, the Central Coast Vineyard Team, and this allows growers that are certified to drop down to tier one. As we move forward with 4.0, option one and option two, these are areas where we are looking for input from stakeholders on what the incentives for surface water nutrients could be. Is it reduced reporting? What other things can an incentive look like? So it's listed as TBD there, to be determined, specifically because we're looking for input. So we're going to move on to the pesticide management table now. And the framing questions that we're focusing here are related to quantifiable progress to minimize toxicity in surface waters from pesticide discharges, and also how can the regional board ensure current and future affordable, safe, and clean water for drinking and environmental uses. Diving into the table, again, we have phasing and prioritization. Ag Order 3.0, currently we are using tiers. Ag Order 4.0, option one, we would consider or recommend phases, again, based on location-specific conditions, such as water quality impairments in surface waters, high-quality surface waters, or risk to surface water areas. Option two would be no prioritization or phasing, and all ranches, all the requirements would apply to the ranches concurrently. For numeric limits, Ag Order 3.0 currently does not have any numeric limits related to pesticides. As we move forward to Ag Order 4.0 option one and option two, we would recommend discharge limits, and they could look something like a pesticide concentration, again, to be determined. We're looking for input on that. A toxicity test, so essentially the number of toxic samples allowed, or a toxicity unit. The differences from option one and option two, of course, we could perhaps set higher limits for the discharge limit under option one, whereas we would have lower limits under option two. For application limits, this is a consequence, hence the black arrow there. Ranches that repeatedly exceed the pesticide concentration discharge limit per the time schedule may be limited or prohibited from applying that pesticide. Likewise, over in option two, ranches that repeatedly exceed the pesticide concentration discharge limit per the time schedule may be prohibited from applying that pesticide. So again, these are consequences. Some other consequences?
Quick question. So when we talk about exceeding the concentration limit, we're talking about in discharges to surface waters, is that correct?
That's correct.
So we don't have, well, the title includes groundwater protection, we don't really have a way to measure that, right?
No, and as we move forward, I will, under the monitoring and reporting, we are proposing some drinking water supply well monitoring related to pesticides to get at our pesticides in groundwater that currently is a data gap for us. So moving on to additional consequences. So ranches that repeatedly exceed the toxicity discharge limit per the time schedule may be required to complete a toxicity identification evaluation to identify those chemicals that are causing the toxicity. Ranches may be limited or prohibited from applying the pesticide that caused the toxicity. Over under option two, ranches that repeatedly exceed the toxicity discharge limit may be required to complete a toxicity identification evaluation, and they may be prohibited from applying the pesticide that caused that toxicity. So the difference being, under option one, they may be limited or prohibited. Under option two is that they may just be prohibited from applying those pesticides.
So question for you on the pesticide concentration. Is staff thinking about requiring limits for just some pesticides or all pesticides being used on a ranch?
So we do have currently information on hotspots and pesticides related to those hotspots. So I know staff have identified some concentrations related to those, but we are considering pesticide limits for the most common pesticides or the pesticides we already know we have problems with in our surface water bodies. But we're also considering those that perhaps we don't have current issues with. So I would say in answer to your question, all options are on the table when it comes to which specific concentrations staff would be focusing on, those with impairments and those without impairments.
So we had a discussion like this for 2.0 involving pesticides, and DPR has a list of those pesticides that it has already determined impact aquatic life and receiving waters. Why not use that list?
So
if someone is reporting that they're using a particular pesticide and it shows up on that list.
Correct. And so I would say that we are utilizing that list. So the toxicity hotspots that I mentioned is utilizing that specific information from DPR.
Okay.
It was my understanding that in 3.0 we only have a select group.
2.0 is what I was.
Oh, 2.0. But did we expand it in 3.0 to include pesticides on the entire list? I thought we were still working with
no.
The subset.
Yeah, currently under 3.0 we are just focusing on chlorpyrifos and diazinon. But again, there's no numeric limits associated with those or time schedules. It's just essentially the tiering criteria that takes the chlorpyrifos and diazinon into account.
Okay.
See, I was thinking of 2.0, and we cherry picked out a couple of the pesticides when we had a whole list from DPR. And I was questioning why should we cherry pick, because, you know, there are assertions that growers will switch pesticides depending on what they're being required to monitor or not. I don't know if that's true or not, but we have seen usage change over time. And so I'm bypassing 3.0. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, with this, what is staff thinking about in terms of pesticide, individual pesticide monitoring? Cherry picking again? Mm-hmm. Or just taking the whole list and saying, if you guys are using anything on this list, you shall monitor for it.
Right. That's so all. Yeah. So rather than saying if you are using one of these five pesticides, we require monitoring, we're saying, we could say, we require you to report your pesticide use based on this full list if it appears there. So we would get some data to see the range.
I'd like to suggest, though, that we do not inadvertently drift in. This is more than asking for clarification. We're kind of taking to another level. So I'd like to not to do that if we can.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. I hope my use of could and would and may consider helps, but I am trying to clarify for myself where we are now versus where we want to go. Thank you, though, for the reminder.
You didn't add the word should.
Oh, yes. I don't use the word should right now.
Thank you. Just Christopher Rose, this just for clarification, remember that at the top of the table in the first row, phase would be based on location-specific conditions such as water quality impairments and so on, that we would be focusing on the areas that, as Elaine said, that we know have hot spots. There are some areas that we know just consistently they have a problem with a classification of pesticides. And then in the discharge limit, maybe we would focus on those pesticides where we have identified problems. However, also notice that there is toxicity tests, which would be capturing other pesticides that are not the same pesticides that we have a problem with. So, for example, if we had a sub-watershed where pyrethroids were a problem, we could focus on discharge monitoring for pyrethroids to try to ferret out where the problems are coming from. But at the same time, we're also doing the other tests to make sure that we're just not moving the problem to a different set of pesticides. So we're trying to focus in on a watershed that we know we have a problem and try to identify where the problems are coming from and to make sure that the problem just isn't shifted to another pesticide. Okay.
So time schedules to achieve these numeric limits. Under Ag Order 3.0, there currently is not a time schedule. Ag Order 4.0 option 1. Again, we're setting out a time schedule that includes the quantifiable interim milestones to achieve a discharge limit by a specific date. So here under option 1, we have listed the specific pesticide concentration as TBD for a specific time to get to that discharge limit. Likewise, we have the number of toxic samples allowed by a specific date to then achieve a discharge limit, as well as the toxicity units allowed by a specific date before we would receive or achieve that discharge limit. Under option 1, of course, relatively longer time schedule perhaps could be chosen. Under option 2, again, highlighted there are all of the same discharge limits, but perhaps it would be a relatively shorter time schedule to achieve those discharge limits. Monitoring and reporting. I'm going to highlight some of the same information that you've already seen on the last table. Under Ag Order 3.0, we currently require the annual compliance form for a subset of Tier 2 and Tier 3 farms. Requires information such as their irrigation, stormwater, and tile drain discharge characteristics, as well as their pesticide management practices. We would recommend and propose that this continues forward, however, renaming it to the Pesticide Management Plan and Report under Option 1 and Option 2. Under Option 1, all ranches must monitor. They would report, though, based on the phase that they are in. And they would provide information such as their application characteristics, irrigation, stormwater, tile drain discharge characteristics, as well as pesticide management practices. There's a star right next to the pesticide management practices because under the Eastern San Joaquin petition order, the reporting, the implementation and reporting of management practices is precedential.
Question, would you, since option one is kind of posed as the soft option, I guess, all ranches monitoring based on phase, what about ranches that, what about, for example, an organic farm? Would you, that while they use some agricultural chemicals or supposed to, by definition, not using pesticides, would we be requiring monitoring of them as well?
So I would say perhaps if they're in a location that is impaired for a specific pesticide, that they would be providing us with this level of reporting. Again, this type of reporting right now is currently done by about 2,300 ranches, about half of the ranches enrolled, some organic farms. So we would just propose to continue this, especially in those areas we have identified as perhaps toxicity hotspots or impaired for pesticides.
I'm going to have to think about it. I just left my head. Okay. But it's a universal question, so I'll think about it in a moment. I'm sorry.
Great. So option two, the difference only being that more measurements would be required under the monitoring and reporting, as well as all of the ranches, you know, based off of their prioritization, the ranches would all be submitting this information concurrently. So if they're in an area that's impaired for pesticides, they would be providing this information all at the same time.
And I hope it's not disruptive to your line of thinking here, but it occurs to me again where we have only a few of the Ag Order 3.0 where we can see the Tier 2, Tier 3 component as it appears, as it could appear in the future order. My question is, and there's probably no answer to it right now, but I would like to think about this for future discussions. Do we have a sense of what the overall impact would be when we go from Tier 2 and Tier 3 that have more stringent or more, you know, frequency is different of reporting, level of reporting is different, et cetera? Do we have an idea of overall numbers? In other words, is it I know it's pretty small set for Tier 3, Tier 2. I'm not sure how many fall in that. I think you've heard bigger numbers. But if we move to phase based on hotspots or other kind of prioritization of criteria, are we seeing a big shift in numbers, or do you anticipate that it's going to be relatively, might be different people, but relatively the same number having to increase their reporting and monitoring? Are you understanding what my question is?
Yeah, so we are considering, you know, what the regulatory impact rate will be on the idea, let's say if we go for phases, on how many ranches would be required to do that related to just this pesticide management table. And I would say that it's probably about equal. So if we have about 2,300 ranches that are currently submitting the annual compliance form as a Tier 2, Tier 3 farm, we would have about the same that are in the pesticide impaired areas or the toxicity impaired areas that would be required to do this level of reporting and monitoring. However, if we were to choose option one, we would phase that monitoring and reporting in based perhaps on watershed areas. And under option two, it would be all the ranches at the same time.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Glad that that is already in the mix. Yeah.
So as we move on, surface water quality trends, I've mentioned this previously. We would propose to continue the current surface water quality trend monitoring under option 1 and option 2 of Ag Order 4.0. All ranches, they must conduct surface receiving water quality monitoring either individually or through a cooperative program. Currently, the cooperative program is Central Coast Water Quality Preservation, Inc. Ag Order 3.0 currently does not have follow-up receiving water monitoring, but as I mentioned previously, for the nutrient table, we would propose a follow-up receiving water monitoring program. And the idea of that, again, is to further identify pollutant source, higher resolution monitoring at the receiving water level. In option 1, ranches in a subset of watershed areas that repeatedly exceed the water quality objectives may be assigned this follow-up surface receiving water monitoring. And it can be performed either individually or through a cooperative program. The difference for option 2 is that ranches in all watershed areas that repeatedly exceed water quality objectives may be assigned this follow-up receiving water monitoring. We would also propose to continue the individual discharge to surface water monitoring. Again, this is more of the individual discharge edge of field type monitoring. Currently under Ag Order 3.0, a subset of Tier 3 ranches are already doing this, and they're submitting information on their discharge flow rate and volume, their pesticide concentrations, as well as their toxicity. As we move forward to option 1 and option 2, option 1 being ranches in a subset of watershed areas would provide this information if they repeatedly exceed the water quality objectives. In option 2, be ranches in all watershed areas that repeatedly exceed the water quality objectives would do this type of monitoring. And they would still provide discharge flow rate and volume, discharge pesticide concentrations, and discharge toxicity. So the drinking water supply well monitoring, this is something that is currently not required under Agriculture 3.0. But we do propose to include it under option 1 and option 2 of Agriculture Order 4.0. And really the idea with this type of monitoring is getting at what type of pesticides are we seeing in our drinking water supply. Right now, again, DPR does do some monitoring related to this, but this is still a data gap and there's not much information available related to pesticides in our drinking water. Under option 1, only a subset of drinking water supply wells would be monitored for pesticides. And again, this could either be done individually or through a cooperative program if a cooperative wanted to take this type of responsibility on. Under option 2, all drinking water supply wells would be monitored for pesticides. Again, either individually or through a cooperative program.
Are you saying that municipal water systems are not monitoring for pesticides?
No, I do not believe that they monitor for pesticides.
Okay.
In some areas they do, and that's done through County Health Department.
Yeah, can you just give us a little more of a picture on that?
Yes, is that in some counties, the county public health does test for pesticides in municipal drinking water systems.
And they have developed their own ordinance or requirements for doing this independent of any state. There is no state requirement.
Is kind of above my pay grade. All I know is that, you know, they do monitoring for pesticides in certain locations.
Okay.
Now, the issue with that perhaps is that this is not uniform throughout our region.
Right.
So.
Okay, thank you.
And go ahead, and then I'll have a question too.
Just a quick question. When you say all drinking water supply wells, I assume you mean all on-farm drinking water supply wells?
That's correct.
Thank you.
So in the drinking water supply wells, and I understand we're still talking about somewhat of a general concept here. You know, a subset of drinking water supply wells, you know, is kind of a pretty big and vague. What is it, 10%, 20%? And the trigger for these requirements is a question too, because are you saying if we have find problem and we have baseline data to show that we do have pesticides found in drinking water wells, then we want you to do XYZ, or irregardless if no trace are found, we want you to do these as a proactive measure? I'm not sure where we are here. Is it triggered because we have found issue, or is it preventative?
So I do know that we have a list from DPR on those pesticides that would be more likely to be found in groundwater, and we would align, you know, if we are going to do a subset of drinking water wells, it would be aligned with that list, as well as perhaps their monitoring where they've already identified where there is issues with pesticides in groundwater. So we would want to focus on those areas and have those homeowners or the growers that perhaps are drinking that water to know what the pesticide concentrations are in their water.
This is Arwen. I'll just add that if we do adopt some sort of pesticide monitoring for drinking water supply wells, we would work closely with DPR to determine the best areas and pesticides to begin monitoring for. As Elaine mentioned, DPR does have a list. They also have areas that they prioritize using their system, their methodology, for where they're trying to target their monitoring. So we could work closely with them to get this monitoring program piece launched.
Yeah, because I think the important point is that DPR has its own monitoring program. And the last thing, you know, I think there's benefit in synergies between agencies.
So the last section on this table, of course, is incentives. You've heard this before, and we're looking for input from stakeholders as well as the board, and staff is going to continue considering what type of incentives that we can have under Ag Order 4.0 Option 1 and Option 2. Moving on to
So now it is quarter past 12. And I suggest that before we move to the next section, this is a perfect time to take a lunch break. And we had scheduled approximately 45 minutes. There are some eateries nearby. So, you know, with the indulgence of shrinking it to 45 from an hour is because we're trying to, you know, being able to leave here at 6 o'clock. And Stephanie, you have an announcement.
Yes, so the board will be going into closed session to discuss litigation that's pending against the board under Government Code Section 11126E2A, and the matter that we'll be discussing is in the agenda under item 12.1, Monterey Coast Keeper versus Regional Water Quality Control Board.
Thank you. So we'll reconvene around 1 o'clock.